Hello, welcome to this edition of the Bearcats Podcast, basketball preview edition. My name is Scott, joined by Matt Oper and Chris Baines. How's it going, Matt?
It's phenomenal. We have a beautiful new arena, and we're about to play Ohio State on campus for the first time in literally almost 100 years.
Yeah, it's really impressive that somehow Mike Bone, I want to say, sold his soul to the devil. I guess I don't want to say that, but it kind of seemed like he did, because I don't know how he convinced Ohio State to come play UC in their home opener in a brand new arena. But he pulled it off, and props.
Yeah, there was an article on The Athletic about how this game came together. Not surprised how much Ohio State was involved in letting it happen. It seemed like they never wanted to play UC. They haven't played in Ohio, in Ohio period, in what, almost 100 years or something, or not 100 years, but 50 years, something insane.
Now, there are a lot of older people that are Ohio State fans, read that as wealthy, who don't want Ohio State to play UC. They don't want Ohio State to make UC seem an equal in basketball, even though historically UC is a far better program and has been forever. Yeah,
let's go. No, it's a lose-lose situation for Ohio State. It's they come down to Cincinnati and they win. That's what they're supposed to do. They come down to Cincinnati and they lose. Well, all of a sudden, to your point, Matt, that UC is on at least equal footing in their mind.
Yeah, and apparently there's a lot of bitterness in Columbus from UC ruining their two greatest years of all time by beating them for the national title, which UC did twice, back to back. Suck at Ohio State.
Yeah. It's the same mindset that UC fans really take towards Miami, Ohio. You know, UC football is in our mind, and in actuality, it is at a higher level than Miami, Ohio right now. We don't want to do home and homes with Miami, Ohio. That's why Mike Bone has scheduled a few home games at PBS. In Ohio State's mind, they are a better program, a better school, a better everything than UC. From a football standpoint, they definitely have an argument there. From a basketball standpoint, you're right, Matt. Ohio State is the lesser program in the state than UC. They might have more money. They might have a better conference, and et cetera. But historically, UC is the better program. But if you're talking about big donors and the guys that make things run up in Columbus, that's not how they see it. And it's a minor miracle that Mike Bone was able to get them to come down this year.
Well, I think having the coach that they have, who participated in the Crossroads Classic in Indiana, who can literally speak to how valuable that is for all those programs, right? And I wouldn't be shocked if in 2-3 years we get something similar going between Xavier, Ohio State, Cincinnati, and Dayton, probably. Or it could be, another random MAC school. Or, you know what I'm saying? We can get that kind of series going in Ohio. And that would be phenomenal for all the brands in this state, right? And even if it doesn't, translate beyond the borders, most college basketball fans don't even know that that happens in Indianapolis every single year. They're unaware. But it's an awesome event. I don't know if either of you guys have been, but it's really something else, because you have all the fans from those four schools. Basically, they all get a corner, and it's just a really great atmosphere for high-level basketball. And Ohio can do that. Ohio can get something similar going. It's just a matter of getting Ohio State on board, right? That's where the friction will be in getting that kind of series going. It's not coming from the other schools. It will come from Ohio State.
Right.
Yeah, definitely. Ohio State is the one who, for some reason, they play everybody in Ohio, it seems, in football, and then nobody in Ohio in basketball, which seems to be something that Chris Holtman's changed since he's been there. Obviously, they agreed to home and home with Cincinnati, and even agreed to play this game in Cincinnati the first year. And Ohio State's schedule, like, they really, like, kind of went nuts in the non-conference. So, like, hopefully that is something that happens, because, like, that would just be a really great event, no matter where in the state they held it. Because all four of those fan bases, well, we know three of the fan bases travel. Ohio State is, if it's not during football season, maybe.
Yeah, and that's, I have to load it up because they got a really, really young team, and they are going to be starting, they're going to be hitting the reset button. So, and the Big Ten is a Big Ten. It's going to be a grind regardless. So they just need to get people, they need to get these young guys up to snuff, up to speed, because, I mean, I don't think the Big Ten is going to be as good as it has been in previous years, but it's still going to be a tough ask.
And anytime you have like multiple top 25 teams, multiple top like what top 15 teams, like in your conference, it's a tough slate. It's just almost something that we've been experiencing ourselves in the AAC, being Cincinnati, albeit with a very worst bottom of the conference. But let's just jump in like broad. How are you feeling about this team? Like what's the number one thing that excites you about this team, Chris?
I think the consistency defensively. It sounds like, let's go back to last exhibition game against Tusculum, if I'm even pronouncing that right. And they held Tusculum to 20 points in the first half. Overall, they were stifling to create turnovers. They wouldn't let them inside. It looked excellent. Reports out of the, you know, hush-hush secret scrimmage against Notre Dame was that Notre Dame was, which is a scrimmage in which UC won, UC was the gauntlet defensively that we have known and loved of them for the last decade or so. That is probably one of the most encouraging things coming into the season is that you're losing a guy, you're losing players like Kyle Washington and Gary Clark underneath, and it seems like UC's defense hasn't missed a step. The defense. Go ahead.
There was an article on The Athletic real quick where Justin Williams, who's like their UC beat writer, asked Darren Savino about the offense, and he's like, "Oh, I hope our defense is good." Kind of made me a bit wary, like especially losing like your biggest anchors and Jacob Evans and Gary Clark. Like, there's going to be some drop off defensively, but like one thing, this coaching staff with this kind of shaken up coaching staff for reasons. Like, they coach defense pretty well, and we know mixed teams will defend, even if it takes until, like, January for them to be elite. Go ahead, Matt.
Yeah, like, the defense is not what gets me out of bed for this team. It's the idea of Jerron Coverland getting, you know, a usage rate above 30. That excites me, because he really hasn't had a guy like him who can, you know, who can shoot it, who can handle it, who can pass. Like, he is very underrated as a passer. And like, he can do anything that you require. And I think the sooner that UC makes the decision, like they did with Jacob Evans a year ago, where when it matters, he gets the ball and he runs the offense, the sooner they make that decision with Jerron Coverland, the better off they're going to be. Because, you know, UC has evolved beyond the point where they need to run a system, where they need to have set plays. And not that, you know, what they would do would just be freewheeling. Like there are concepts that you can build in the offense that makes, you know, like, you know, down screen into a pick and roll, blah, 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 blah. Like, you can build an offense with one guy with that skill set, right? And the sooner they make the decision that Cumberland is that guy and that they don't really need to run the same four sets that we've been seeing do nothing for 5 years, the better off they're going to be. I just, my concern, as always, is going to be, when does Mick let go of the reins, if he ever does, with this team? Because he did last year. Like, he let him play a lot down the stretch. And his way is generally, with a team like this where you're playing a lot of people in new roles with more responsibility, that he grips the reins really tight. And I don't think that will serve this group well on offense, because there's enough talent there to have a highly efficient offense with low turnovers without having Mick call every single set from the sideline. It's just a matter of question. It's a question of whether Mick agrees with that, because if he doesn't, he won't. And we know exactly what happens when he doesn't.
To your point about Cumberland, I think he's definitely going to get the Evans role from last year, because, like, where else is that going to come on the offense? He's by far the star of the offense. Like, I know they have 2 point guards starting, although they've moved Broom off the ball. But, like, he's better than Jennifer. He's better than Broom. Like, he's going to have to work. And, like, part of, like, his story is, like, how he doesn't like the spotlight. But he's going to get it this season, because he's their most important player. It's going to be when he plays well, they're going to do well. When he plays poorly. And, like, that just means all around poorly. Like, they're going to really struggle, because you have some unknowns, especially on the front line. You're really relying on guys who haven't had the opportunity to do it for 20, 25 minutes a game. And the backcourt is kind of iffy, because some of the guys haven't had a ton of a run either. Like, what are you really going to get from Trevor Moore and Keith Williams? And, like, Logan Johnson's interesting, but how much is he going to play? Like, how much is Jennifer going to progress? Like, those are some huge questions for this offense. But you already have one answer, and it's Jerron Cumberland.
Well, and the real question is, how do you change your structure offensively to make life easier for Jerron Cumberland? And I think we all know what the answer to that is. The answer is, you play one big. Because if you only play Trey Scott, or if you only play Nasir Brooks, and you don't play them together, that creates a whole lot more room in the lane. And Jerron Cumberland is at his best when he can get shoulder to shoulder with people. And like, if he gets somebody on his hip, it's over. They're not getting the ball. He's going to the rim. He's going to get fouled, or he's going to make the layup. Right? So you need, like, if that is the one best thing that your offense can do, you need to align your personnel grouping so that when Jerron's in the game, it is as easy as possible for him to make that move. And Mick, with his love of playing two bigs and working really hard to get them post touches, if he tries to do, like, if this offense spends as much time getting Nasir Brooks and Trey Scott post touches as they did getting Kyle Washington and Gary Clark post touches, we're in trouble. Because
they are not that good.
And like, post-ups in general are a low-efficiency play in basketball. Like, everybody thinks getting closer to the rim is better, but post-ups, like, one-on-one post-ups, they're not that efficient. So if they try to make that the central focus of the offense, it's going to be a problem.
Yeah, and that's my biggest concern, and it's what we saw against Tusculum, is that whenever the ball came at the floor and went to the top of the key, it almost immediately went inside. Now, if you're going to go inside and you're giving it to a guy like Gary Clark, who is on the Houston Rockets right now, or Kyle Washington, who I believe is somewhere in the G League or somewhere over in Europe right now, that's an okay play, because they're talented enough to either score their own points, or in terms of, like, you know, Gary Clark, he was excellent at finding an outlet pass on the edge. Now you're giving it to, like, Trey Scott or Nasir Brooks or Ilyil Sosume. Those guys are not Gary Clark or Kyle Washington. The strength of this team this year is going to be at the 1, 2, and 3 spots. I mean, it just is. I mean, you're losing Jacob Evans, whatever. You still have more out of your backcourt than you have your frontcourt this year. And I 1,000% agree with you, Matt, that if they try to play slow. They try to get the ball inside methodically. They don't let the guards cut in and make their own space or get space for them. We're going to be looking at like 60 to 65 point games out of this offense, which is very concerning to me.
Yeah, and like I'm not as worried about the pace because it is what it is. Like this team will never push the pace and will never try to get easy buckets in transition. It just, that's what they are. But saying that, like you can make it easy, like you can still generate easy buckets in the half court. And like I think the way to play for this group is going to be to have a classic rim runner, whether that's Trey Scott or whether that's Soseme, setting pick and rolling to the rim hard, you know, with Jaron Cumberland. Like that is a, if that, that can be a central focus of a very efficient offense. But if you're going to try to run those plays and have Nasir Brooks sitting on the block as well, like that's just not going to work. It's never going to work because it's going to be too crowded and too congested down there. And it's going to be too easy for defenses to make the, to slide over and make a play on that. They have to space the floor with this group.
Yeah.
That is the only way they're going to have, that is the only way to have even a faint hope of matching the efficiency that they had last year. Is by putting the floor and getting, you know, easy looks for guys on the perimeter or at the hit or at the rim. That's
yeah. Agreed. And what do we talked about in the off season? We knew replacing Clark and Washington underneath was going to be a tall task. We hope that, you know, we saw flashes of Trey Scott last year. We saw that he could be an offensive, not like powerhouse, but like he could pick up the slack. But Nasir Brooks, I mean, he's never averaged over like 2 or 3 points per game through his entire career at UC. He's always been a rim protector. He's always been a guy who is capable of getting rebounds. But he's not a guy who can, you know, do a step back 10-foot jumper like Kyle Washington can and, you know, have relative success. He's not the offensive player that Kyle Washington was. And if you're going to try to get him touches every single time you come up the court, you're just kicking yourself in the ass. And that's all you're doing. And you're costing yourself points by being inefficient.
I think to mess, like overall larger point at first, like the spacing is going to be so huge. Because like the efficiency was really good last year, but it was like a little down from the year before. And it seems like this year it's going to be probably a lot more down. Like it'd be kind of surprising if they had like a top 50 offense again, or top 30 offense like they had 2 years ago. So like it's going to be really important to get these guys in good spots. And it's like starting two bigs, like starting really doesn't matter because what, Brooks only played like 15 minutes in the opener, the exhibition opener. It's like whatever combinations they can get on the court, like space the floor and give Cumberland and Broom room to go is so important because you also lose like two of your better three-point shooters. Like Gary Clark was knocked down three-point shooter last year. Evans was what their leading three-point shooter in terms of what makes. And now you're turning it over to who knows, really. It's like trusting some of these guys to be big-time shooters like right off the bat.
Yeah, and Trevor Moore is probably going to be a better shooter because he's going to get better looks and better opportunities playing with starters than he did as a backup. Justin Jennifer, you know, started very hot as a three-point shooter and like was above 40% for most of the year, but then kind of tailed off at the end of the season. Cade Broom's a very good three-point shooter. Keith Williams is a theoretical three-point shooter. We won't really know until he gets a lot of opportunities. Like, because Keith was bad on offense last year. How he adjusts and how he changes is going to be to a newer role because, like, he was a prototypical freshman where the speed of the game was just way too much for him. Like, he just couldn't cope with it. Year two, he should be better, but that is still something where we don't really know. Logan Johnson is I think it's going to be a high volume, high percentage 3-point shooter right from the jump. Like, I'd be shocked if he was under 35%. If only because he's, you know, like his footwork's great, his form is great. I don't see any reason why he shouldn't shoot at that level. Like, it shouldn't be a problem. So you have the pieces to space the floor, you know, credibly. But none of that's going to matter if, you know, I hate to, you know, beat the point into the ground, but none of that will matter if the entire focus of the offense is getting Trey Scott a post up. Because I love Trey Scott, but that's not what he does. That's not what he's good at. That's not where he's most efficient. And for a very good reason, we all have reservations about Mick's ability to find the most efficient usages for the players that he has.
Mick, real quick, you want to talk about like guys who started off hot last year, then like kind of faded. Trevor Moore was one of them. Like, knocked the lights out to start the year when he was getting consistent playing time, and then he started playing good teams and he sat on the bench a lot. That he would have flashes where he would hit a couple, but he was just so up and down. And like getting him consistent run, which he should have this year, like given their backcourt situation, it's like his percentage was 31% last year, only 29% conference play, which with how good of a shooter he is, like that's definitely going to come up this year, at least you would think. Like, Keith Williams is an interesting case because he shot so terribly last year in pretty much every aspect, but he's like athleticism just like jumps off the screen. It's like if he can just like step up and really get in the flow of the game, like your bench starts looking a little better because you still have some big question marks like with Sosume and like Fredericks is a transfer, a JUCO transfer. It'd be interesting to see how they mix him in.
Yeah, and the point about Keith Williams, like, I know his numbers were bad last year because he was bad last year. Like,
he was very freshman-y, let's just say that.
Yes. But, like, you watch him play and you watch him shoot. And, like, in my head, like, I have a checklist of things that I look for in a good shooter. Like, you know, is the elbow bent perfectly? You know, do they keep the ball away from you when you go from your shooting pocket to your shot motion? Are your feet aligned properly? And, like, he checks all those boxes, which is why I say he's a theoretical three-point shooter. Like, he should be. Like, he's got the form. He's got the footwork. It's just a matter of comfort. And he was never comfortable last year. So if he's comfortable this year and he knows what his role is and he knows what's expected of him, he should be able to hit three-pointers at like a 30% range. And that's not great, but that's a huge step up from last year. And that's to the point where the defense has to kind of respect that. Because otherwise, they're just going to play off him and play to his drive. If he hits enough shots where they have to kind of play up to him and play him even, I think he has a chance to become, you know, an effective offensive player for this group.
Yeah, I mean, he could just got off to such a terrible start shooting threes last year. He was 1 of 15, like his first 15 attempts. Then he finished, 3 of 12? So hopefully he rounds more to the 3 of 12 range. But, like, I think one of the biggest things with him is, like, he seemed to be, that was in his head last year, and he stopped shooting threes as the season went along, unless he was wide open. Because, like, he showed some promise. And it seems like we all are wary about some of the big men. So you're going to need scoring if you're going to score like 70 points a game. And it's got to come from somewhere.
Yeah, and that's the question with this offense because, you know, Kyle Washington, Jacob Evans, and Gary Clark was, 40 points a game? Pretty much automatic. I mean, they all had their offense, but that you could count on that group to get that kind of production. Kane Broome will probably score more because he's now going to be playing more as like an off guard. We'll get more opportunities that way. So that's going to be, you know, 10, 12. Carver Lynn's probably going to be 15, 18, somewhere in that range. And then after that, it's people will score. It's just you don't know where and you don't know how it's going to come.
Yeah, like one of the things that does worry me a bit about Broom is like when at the end of the season, like he played not great. Like when the games mattered the most, like he had after like the SMU game, he had like a miserable AAC tournament. He had a miserable NCAA tournament. So that's like hopefully he can put that behind him and like perform as the off-ball guard because I really don't know what the options are besides him. And it's like, because he's one of those guys, you know what he's going to give you. He's going to be like a steady hand on the floor. Like, I think the real question is at point guard. Because Justin Jennifer, like, he doesn't progress, and he's just Justin Jennifer from last year. Like, the questions of, like, when they go to Logan Johnson are going to start almost immediately. And, like, they've almost already started now.
Like it's they like, have started now.
Yeah.
It's going to be just more intense, like, if he has a bad game against Ohio State, for instance.
Yeah, I don't think, I mean, unfortunately, the books are written on Justin Jennifer. He can't create his own shot. He's too small to really get jumpers in space or jumpers inside the 3-point line. He can't really drive. All he really is a good defender, and he can distribute the ball and, you know, be that field general or court general for the offense. If Logan Johnson could do all of that plus create a shot and hit threes at a consistent rate, I mean, he had a good one against Tusculum. I don't know why he wouldn't replace Justin Jennifer's minutes. I mean, I honestly don't care who starts as long as, like, the more efficient player is getting more of the minutes. But I don't see – I just don't see Mick Cronin turning over the reins from a senior to a freshman at point guard. That's just never going to happen.
Yeah, because
and like in a lot of respects, what we're setting up for is very similar to the Gilan Nguyen, Troy Copain debate six years ago, where it was obvious that Troy was a better, more efficient player. He was a better fit for the offense, but Nguyen still started that entire year, right? And then they tried to kind of go half and half, and it just they would have been better served just going straight to Troy, but.
Yeah,
Mick is not that. He's just not that guy. He's just not because he cares so much about defense and he cares so much about, you know, instilling the right culture with his guys that he's never, unless it's someone like Gary Clark or Jacob Evans, he's just never going to hand real responsibility to a freshman. He's so reticent and so leery of that, even though, you know, especially in a case like this where this is a rebuilding year. It's a partial reload because you still have Jaron, but it's a rebuild, right? And rebuilds are generally better served by serving youth. And that is just so not in Mick's DNA.
Yeah, definitely not. And it kind of seems, well, just based on his history, the years that they've had to rely on youth were the years that they were not good. Yeah, like, because he, like, loves the seniors. He loves the upperclassmen. Like, a bit too much. Because, like, the Gwyn Copain situation is, like, obviously something that stood out forever. And, like, he's done that with multiple other positions as well. It's not like he just does it with point guard. But, like, with how structured he runs the offense, it's like they're definitely going to have Jennifer out there closing games. Even though Jennifer didn't close out games much last year. Which just makes it an interesting situation. Like, what they're going to do with, like, their lineup. There's so many different ways it could go.
Yeah, and that's why the coaching shakeup is interesting. Because for 8 years, it's the same 4 dudes in the room making decisions. And it's the same voices. It's the same thought process. And now there's a different guy in there. And I'm really, really hopeful that a different guy with different ideas will be able to kind of push Mick outside of his comfort zone a little bit. because he hasn't been outside his comfort zone. Like, we were, you know, when he went out for that year, and he said he watched a ton of college basketball, and he really, you know, changed the way that UC plays. And then he comes back the next year, and it's the exact same system. It's the exact same approach. Nothing changed. And he had platitudes about how, well, you know, like, we're an ocean liner. Like, we're not Kentucky. We can't turn this over in a year. It's going to take time. Well, that was two years ago. So the ocean liner is midterm. Are we going to see that it's turning this year? That's my biggest question. Because if it's just more talented players doing the same old shit, you're going to get the same old results.
Yeah, and that's kind of my – I mean, you kind of mentioned the coaching turnover. I mean, it's not like they replaced Larry Davis with outside folks. I mean, Greg Yankovsky, he's been in the program for 6 years. Mark Berger's been in the program for 9 years. I mean, they might have had, you know, less of a voice than they do now. And, you know, their voice probably got heard a lot less than it does now. But it's probably still kind of following the same mindset, unfortunately. And, you know, we're kind of putting the cart – this has been a very negative podcast. We don't really know what this team's going to do this season. We don't really know if they can score at the proficiency that they did last year with the different set of players. Very, very questionable right now if they can, based on the Tusculum game and some of the things we've seen this past offseason. But it does really feel like more of the same. And the problem is that you don't have a roster with two NBA players on it anymore. You know, I mean, maybe you do in Jerome Cumberland, but at least at this point, you don't have that. And you're right, Matt. If they're going to basically run the same type of system with less talented players, you're not even going to get the same results. You're going to get worse results because they're not talented enough to, or the system doesn't allow them to live up to their talents and open themselves up.
I would argue this podcast hasn't been too negative. I think there's like a lot of big questions about this team that are like really tough to answer. And some of that may come off in what seems like a negative light, but it's not like we want them to go like 11 and like 19 or something.
Well, like,
I'm just saying that for the people who complained that we're too negative.
Person. Hi, Mom.
It's not about, like, this is a reset. I mean, it is what it is. Like, you see, like, that's the great thing about college basketball is it kind of goes in waves, right? You, especially the way that Mick runs a program where he doesn't even go after the guys who were one and done. And yeah, that's not going to be a thing anymore, so it's not really going to matter. But, like, he doesn't go for that guy. He's not in that pool. He's not swimming in that pool at all. So he goes for a different kind of group of players. So what happens is, He builds the team for a couple of years. Like, it's much how college basketball used to work, where you get a group and then they all kind of mature together and reach the peak at the same time. And you have, you know, a group that won 60 games in 2 years. And in the tournament, what do they have to show for it?
Yeah, that actually was going to be my next point, is like, how can you look at how last year ended and not be kind of, like, negatively, like, look at this team and, like, see just, like, what happened, how it ended. Like, they blew a gigantic lead and could have gone to the Final Four.
So, like, if that's the peak for that group of players, and you're going to start with a new group now, like, you need to change, like, there's something wrong. Because a team that good should have more success in March than they did. And they won the conference tournament once. And they won an outright conference title. And, you know, they won a couple games in the NCAA tournament. And that's it. That's all they had to show for it. That's really depressing. Because they that is a team that should be competing for Final Fours. This is a program now at this point where the Sweet 16 should be the expectation. But every year in March, it's the same old shit. And there has been no indication of a change of process. And I'm not saying fire Mick. Like, Mick is going to be here for as long as he wants to be here, and I'm fine with that. But he constantly talks about how his goal and his expectation is to compete for national titles. And how much more evidence do we need that the way that things have been run for the last 8 years is not going to get you close to that role, close to that level of achievement, unless you get every break in the tournament. You get the perfect draw. You get everybody losing. And then you take care of business. And UC got the perfect draw. And crazy shit happened. And it opened wide up. And they didn't take the opportunity. And that's why this year is going to be a step back. It's always going to be a step back when you're going from that kind of a team to a whole new group. The only person who's really there who had a lot to do with that you know, achievement is Duran. Duran's still around, and he's going to headline a new group. And the question is, you have a new group. You're recruiting a lot better. You have more talented offensive players on your squad. When is it going to show? I mean, that's a legit question. Like, that is a legitimate question for Mick Cronin at this point. Is when will we see what you've been talking about, what you're doing behind the scenes in terms of, you know, recruiting better offensive players, more capable offensive players? You recruit more capable offensive players, but then you stick them in this stifling scheme where they had no chance to express themselves. They don't play with any creativity. Every play is a look at Mick to see what we're going to do. Like, that's not how that is not conducive to high level basketball. It's just not.
Because like that just doesn't seem, well, it doesn't seem like it works. It just doesn't work. And like last year, like, is its own thing. But that was the greatest team that he's probably ever going to have at Cincinnati. It'd be amazing if he had better teams like in the next couple of years. Like, that's your high area, and like you like barely had like a top 50 offense with like two NBA players, like a first round draft pick on your team. Like, so like, the issue is just the system he runs. And like you said, like, he's going to be here until he has to leave. It's like, there's nobody's questioning that. It's just questioning like his like overall offensive philosophy, because nobody's going to question his defensive philosophy because they pretty much always deliver on defense. But it's like, if you have cases where your offense just goes to tank, like it did last year with like their best offensive team, like what should have been like their best offensive team in a long time. It's like, you can't look at this roster with like those guys missing and be like, oh, like here's how they're going to fill the hole, because we don't know how they're going to do it. It's like, hope Trace Scott and Nysir Brooks like kill the offensive glass every game. It's like, they could do it, but like, you can't rely on that. Like, hope Sosa may like show something completely different than what he did last year when he looked incredibly raw. I mean, it could happen. Like, they could coach him up a ton, but it's like, what's he going to do against Ohio State? It's like one thing to do it against like Tuskegee or do it against like Milwaukee or North Carolina Central. It's a complete other thing when you're playing like the good teams on your schedule. And like, they have a killer December run, which it may not like decide if they get in the tournament or not, but it will decide like if they end up with like wearing their home jerseys or their road jerseys in the first round.
Yeah, and I think at this point we can pretty much pencil this program in to win 20 games a year. And I think the same can be said this season. My biggest concern is, are we going to be slogging our way to 20 wins? Or are we going to see 20 wins rather easily? Now, I don't think they're going to win 20 games as easily as they did last year. I mean, I agree with you, Scott. Last year was Mick's most talented roster that he's ever had. I don't know the next time we're going to see a roster like that. Maybe this season, maybe next season, maybe never. I don't know. Hopefully with the new arena, they bring in more talented recruits like Samari Curtis coming in next season. But the concern I have is if they slog their way to 20 wins, I don't know. I'm concerned if they make the tournament. I think I think, unfortunately, this staff has rested on their laurels to be a defensive, to be such an overly defensive-minded team that they can get there on defense every year. And they've dug their heels in on that so much that, to Matt's point, they're not gonna really go that far outside the box to open up the offensive system to the point where it's a detriment to the defense. And I think that's kind of my concern this year, and that's what I really want to be looking out for as we go into the course of the season.
Yeah, and like, we know what Mick's ambition is. He wants to win a national title. He wants to bring one home. But to do that, like, he's got the defense part of it nailed. No question. Like that's the identity of this program. That will always be the identity of this program. I have no issue with that. But if a national championship is the goal, you have to play a top 20 offense at a top 20 efficiency rate. You have to. There's not been a national title who has not been in the top 20 of KenPom. Like, I don't want to say ever, but it's very rare. Like, you need a perfect set of circumstances to get to that point. Like, you know, Villanova has become a dynasty because they just evaporate teams with their offense. And it's not like they have a super complex NBA-style offense. They really don't. They have, like, a handful of concepts that they like to use, and they just run them to death. And the biggest thing is that they allow a lot more freedom of movement and freedom of thought, really. And that's, you know, they play with so much confidence. I would love to see a UC team play with that kind of confidence in offense. And even last year, you know, that was a great offense. But even then, there were a lot of times where everybody's looking over their shoulder to Mick. And like, at your job. Do you ever do good when you have to constantly look over your shoulder at your boss? No.
I love being micromanaged.
That's not a conducive environment to success in anything. But that is how UC has played offense and played the entire sport for the entire Mick Cronin era. And that's – it is what it is. Like, I have no problem with Mick. I would just like for him to – loosen the reins a little bit and be surprised by the results.
Because yeah, and I think, go ahead, Matt. Sorry.
No, I just think if you tell them what the goal is and let them go about it in their own way, you're going to be surprised by the results. Like, that's just basic man management, but that's not really how he does it. And, I mean, like, it's just kind of like a philosophical issue I have with Mick and will always have with Mick, because Mick is Mick. He is what he is as a personality, and that's not really going to change. I just would love for him to see the opportunities that are there for him to take a step back.
And I do think that Mick has opened up the offense over the years as he's brought in more talented offensive players. I think that has been the case. I think we saw a better or one of the most free-flowing, efficient offenses last year that we've seen over the course of his entire tenure as UC coach. My concern is now that the talent has left, now that he's rebuilding, and I think, Matt, you mentioned this earlier, is he going to keep that offense, that same offensive philosophy? Is he going to open it up even further and try new things and, you know, build a system or continue to tweak a system that opens up the floor for his offensive players? Or is he going to rest on his laurels, dig in, and go back to what he knows, which is just playing hard-nosed defense and winning games 60-50? And it seems like he's doing the latter, and that's the biggest concern I have going into this season. Because it's almost like he sees the talent leave, and he's afraid to try new things. But, you know, maybe it's just been a couple of games. Maybe we'll see it. Maybe we'll see a better offense against Ohio State. Maybe we'll see something different over the next couple of months. But that's my biggest concern going into the season.
But you can look at the last big drop-off they had, which was, like, the Sweet 16 season to the following year. They went from, like, 55-62 on offensive efficiency. It's like a nosedive to, like, 118 And it didn't get out of, like, the hundreds until a couple years ago. It went to the 70s. And, like, last year it was top 50. It's like, they take another dive like that. Like, it just, I don't know. It just seems like that type of thing. Like, it really opens you up to the bubble game. And given, like, the history of this conference, like, being on the bubble in this league, like, it probably isn't great. But, like, with mixed history, they probably won't be on the bubble. Like, I think that's going too far. Like, they'll probably still win 21 or 22 games. But, like, the question isn't, like, how good you do in the regular season. The question is, like, what do you do in the tournament? And,
right.
Like, he has...
Well, yeah, that's where we're at with Mick at this point. It's the regular... It's not that the regular season doesn't matter. He has proven himself to be a phenomenal regular season coach. But success in this sport is not measured by how you do from November to February. Success is measured in March. And he has not had a team deliver in that, you know, situation since 2012. That is going to be 7 years ago this March, you know, this spring. 7 years. I mean, like, the central lesson of that team was when you have more spacing, everything goes better. Your offense looks better. It allows you to do more things. It gives you a greater margin of error. And did he really learn that lesson? Right? Because that was the lesson of that team is, let's play four guards around a really good big. That's what they did. And since then, every year, it's, you know, two bigs. Two bigs every single time. Never mind that, you know, your two bigs can't really, you know, do any, like, can't do anything in a post-up or anything. And then he finds two guys who, even though it was kind of a clunky fit at times, being Kyle Washington and Gary Clark, but they worked together. It really worked. And, you know, those two guys are gone. Are you still going to try to run this same shit with less talented players for an entire season? I mean, like, use the regular season as an experimental ground. Like, try new shit on offense. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. It can't be any worse than what you're going to try to do featuring those two as post players.
And that year is, like, the one, like, you have to circle and, like, wonder why he hasn't run an offense like he ran that year. Like what you mentioned, four guards. They played Kilpatrick at, like, the four, and Jaquan Parker at the four. Like, so, it, like, kind of makes you wonder, like, why they haven't tried something like that, like, in the later years. Like, why he's so stuck on two bigs. Because that team, like, overachieved in some ways. Like, they went to the Big East title game. They went to the Sweet 16. But, like, that team showed, like, he can do it with his style. And if you have guys who can defend, like, and rebound like Parker did, and, like, guys who could come off the bench and, like, put up points like Patrick did. Like, I really don't know, like, why he hasn't done something like that.
Well, yeah, and I mentioned that team because, in a lot of ways, the personnel of this group reminds me of that team. Not the Yancey Gates, but if they play small and you put Jerron Cumberland at the four and you run Trey Scott or Soseme at the five, and you run 4 or 5 pick and roll with three shooters around that, that will light people up. Because in college, centers aren't supposed to play pick and rolls. But if you do a 4 or 5 pick and roll with those two, like, you are going to get so many easy buckets. You're going to get so many easy opportunities. It's right there. It is staring in the face as an opportunity. Will he take it? I don't know, because that is so far outside of his realm of comfort that I don't know if he even sees it as an opportunity. And that's, you know, we spent a lot of time running down Nick. And, like, I love everything that he's done about this program. I love the culture that he's installed. But if he wants to have the success that he says he wants to have, you got to find a way to be more efficient and better on offense. And that is a method of play that is staring him right in the face. But I would be shocked if we saw any of Jerron Cumberland at the four. And I'd be shocked if I saw a single 4 or 5 pick and roll this entire season.
You know, like, some people would make the case, like, in the years since then, they had Justin Jackson, and they had Ellis, and they had Kyle Washington, and obviously Gary Clark. But, like, there's a way to stagger your lineups where you can have those guys on the court and still play the same minutes and still, like, explore what you do on offense. It just seems like they have to have two bigs on the floor. It's like Ellis came out and then DeBerry came in. And, like, Kyle Washington came out and then, like, Trey Scott went in. Or Gary Clark rarely came out, but, like, he came out, then, like, Brooks went in. And it's like they wouldn't come out and then, like, I don't know, Trevor Moore comes in. And you play some, like, funky lineup when, like last year was really the year to do it because Jacob Evans could guard, at least in college, he could guard 1 through 4, like, easily. And it just seemed like they didn't trust, like, the system to do it. I don't know. Like, it's kind of annoying in, like, that sense because, yeah. Like, there's so much potential for, like, this team. And it just seemed like... Like, just using Logan Johnson as an example, like, he's going to play 20 minutes a game. And, like, if he played 25 minutes a game and you played Nysir Brooks, like, 15 minutes a game, like, what's... It seems like your offense would be better. And, like, the hit you would take on defense wouldn't be that, like, severe.
Well, just, like name the top five players on this team, regardless of position. Are there two forwards in that top five?
No.
Yeah, that's the point. Right? Like, yeah, for all of Mick's ability to bring in and recruit, you know, he's done a nice job bringing in guards and point guards, shooting guards, and threes, but there's not a lot of raw talent, you know, at the power forward and center position. So why wouldn't you lean on your talent and go for the... And hell, you're even bringing in a ton of length at the guard and three. Like, why wouldn't you just lean on that?
Yeah, and, like, to that end, early in his tenure, he really struggled to recruit wings, and now he's just rolling them out. And what really made – so, not to backtrack, but what really made that 2012 team work was that you had Jaquan Parker, who could defend a four and rebound like a four and was actually a shooting guard, right? But you know who's even – like, Jerron Cumberland is Parker on fucking steroids. Because he's built like a Mack truck. He can defend fours no problem because he's 6'5 and 240 pounds of pure muscle. He can rebound like a motherfucker. Like, that is what you want from that kind of hybrid spot. But I want to see it, and I don't think I will. And that's what's so frustrating is because there are opportunities there. And, like, I'm not the smartest basketball fan in the world, and I know that. And like, I have a preferred style of play, which is the antithesis of what Mitt wants to do. But, like, that seems like such an obvious opportunity to replicate what made one of the best teams that he's had. And what really made that team go was having a guy who could defend bigs but was actually a guard. And they have that. And he's not going to get used like that. And that's what's so frustrating.
Well, it'd be interesting to see if, like, they use Rashawn Fred in that type of, like, role. Like, he's 6'5", but, like, his junior college numbers, at least, like, rebounding-wise, were pretty outstanding. It's like the question with him is, like, can he defend at the Met level Nick wants him to? Because if, like, you throw, like, a guy who averaged a double-double last year, and can knock down some threes. If you put him on the floor with, like, Trey Scott and Cumberland and Broom and whoever you have at guard, that seems like it could be an interesting team. It just seems that, like, Frederick's played to be because, like, Cumberland was out of the game.
Yeah, and the convention is what is frustrating all of us, is... that Mick has a set mode of playing, of deploying his guys. And even if the talent doesn't suit the way that he wants to deploy them, he's still going to deploy them that way. And that's, like, this is a good team. They're going to be really good. I think they're going to win the conference again because I don't trust UCF for shit. And everybody else has taken a major step back. Like, this is now the class of the league in terms of how programs. So they're going to be really good. They're going to make the tournament in March. But it's at the point where, yeah, to repeat the phrase, like, the regular season doesn't matter. I want to see them succeed in March, and we haven't seen it.
Actually, I would say real quick before we go to Chris, like, the regular season matters in the sense that you just won the regular season. Now, like, winning the regular season is, like, something that you have, I don't know, that you come to expect. And he should be right there, like, to win it this season as well. Like, if they don't win the conference, it's, like, it's kind of disappointing.
Yeah, I mean, I'll say it before. I mean, this team is penciled in to win 20 games a year. But beyond that, I don't know if this system can, especially with this the amount of turnover they went last year. I don't know how many more games beyond 20 they're going to win. And for as fluky as that Nevada game was last year, you know, that's kind of what you expect in the tournament. Like, you have to win those games. Like, you're not playing East Carolina. You can't expect to be up 22 or whatever with 12 minutes to go and win that game. Like, you're facing the best of the best. And, you know, for as much as Mick has done for this program, I mean, this program under him has the stigma of floundering in March and not deep. They had the one Sweet 16 run in how many years under Mick? Like, a decade at least? I mean, that is what it is. And until this program can prove that they can go deep in March on a consistent basis, you know, they're kind of guilty until proven innocent in that respect. And I agree that, you know, I don't want to take the regular season for granted. Winning the conference outright last year and winning the tournament was awesome. I love seeing them hoist the trophies twice. But what you do in the tournament really, really matters. And if you're at a program that's spending $87 million on a renovated arena and you're bringing in four-star recruits on left and right nowadays, you got to go deeper in the tournament than they have been.
It's like this same thing that, like, Virginia is facing. And some people have called Cincinnati, like, a worse Virginia, given, like, their pacing. And Cincinnati's, like, power numbers, like, always look a little lower than Virginia's. But, like, the same thing, like, Tony Bennett has to face. And he failed more spectacularly last year. But, like, until, like, you wipe off that label of, like, he can't make a deep run. Like, it's going to be there every single year. And, like, the same old Cincinnati thing, like, seems like it happens every single year because, like, they end up playing, like, the same way in, like, all the biggest games. And
that's really what I'm looking for in this year. I want results. I do. I'm a UC fan. I have a rational expectation. I'm well aware of this. But what I really want to see is I want to see them try weird shit in games that matter. I don't give a fuck what you do against North Carolina Central. It doesn't matter. But, like, Mick will experiment with rotations in those games. He will play guys out of position. He will do stuff in those games. I want to see him do that in games that matter. Because you know what? When it's March, you have to have everybody ready to play, and you have to have answers for whatever the opposition is going to throw at you. And the answer can't be, you know, to jam your round peg in the square hole, because that just doesn't work. I want to see more variability, because I want to see the potential for them to have multiple answers to how they are played, to how they are approached by other teams. And in the past, that hasn't been there. So I want to see more in these games in the regular season that matter. I don't want to see, you know, Mick play seven guys against Xavier because that's the only seven guys he trusts. Like, you have to show trust in more people because you're going to need contributions from more people if you ever intend to reach your goal of a national championship.
Yeah, that's what makes starting this season out with Ohio State, like, so interesting, because we get some of those answers right off the bat. You don't have to, like, roll out the November, like, wipeout games. Like, you just roll out against a team that made the tournament last year and that's going to be well-coached. And, like, who knows how good Ohio State would be. It's like their exhibition game, just looking at their stats, they had the same problem UC did shooting-wise. So this game could be kind of ugly to watch. But, like, it's going to be interesting to see how, like, Mick works the rotation, because then it's going to kind of go away when they start, like, going to some of these tournaments, like where they played against George Mason and probably Baylor, and then when they have their big December gauntlet. What do you think, Chris?
Yeah, I mean, I'm in the same boat. I think they're. I think this early in the year, it's going to be a lot of against like the North Carolina Central, the Milwaukees, the Western Michigans, but it's going to be 70 to 60 point games against like the Ohio States, you know, even like the George Masons or you know, whoever they're going to play between Baylor and Ole Miss and. I don't know, until they show me something different, that's just kind of what you expect, because that's what they've been doing for the last several years, regardless of who's actually on the floor.
Yeah, definitely. Let's try to take this into a positive direction before we end it. Who do you think the surprise player is going to be on this team, if you think there's going to be a surprise player? Like, who do you think could make the next step?
So is that, like, an existing, like, not a new player, but okay. Breakout player?
Yeah, we'll say breakout player first, and then you can do new players second.
I'm going to say Eliel Sosome. I mean, I don't think Brooks stays long in this lineup, and Sosome has a big breakout year.
I hope so, because I really liked what we saw from Sosome in the exhibition season last year. Like, obviously, he has, like, some ways to go because he's really raw. But, like, his talent, like, kind of shines through, and, like, you can see, like, the glimpses of what he's capable of. And if he rebounds and plays defense without being, like, a black hole on offense, I think that's a great start. I think mine would be Trevor Moore. We talked about him earlier. But I really think this is the time that he steps in to that role and, like, ends up being a key part of the rotation. It's like his jump shot is just really pretty. And if he can stay on the floor, like, which he did at sometimes last year, I think he could make a pretty big impact. And what about newcomer? Is it just Logan Johnson, or are you interested in what anybody else can do?
I want to say it's Logan Johnson. I wish it would be Logan Johnson, but the reason Logan Johnson is not going to be the newcomer is because Justin Jennifer is on the screen. And Justin Jennifer is going to get most of the minutes, and Logan Johnson is going to get garbage time. Until proven otherwise, I think that's just how it's going to go. So I'm going to say Rashawn Fredericks, just because he's, you know, they're replacing Jacob Evans. They need to find minutes out there at three. And he's going to fill those minutes, and I'm really excited to see what he can do. But I kind of was hoping it would be like a Logan Johnson.
I think there's a chance Logan Johnson could take some run. Like, maybe not with the Ohio State game, because he'll probably play, like, at most, like, 20 minutes. But if, like, he has some breakout games and like, the weeks late until they hit the Thanksgiving tournament, I think he could end up being like a pretty interesting cog in the offense, and because I don't know, I really don't know how much you can trust Justin Jennifer to improve. Like he's a spot up shooter.
He's what he is.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Like he's a spot up shooter, like you said earlier. Like he's decent enough at getting the offense going, and he tries hard on defense. But like he was terrible on twos last year. And I don't think he's going to get much better this year. I mean, he did go 2-3 against whoever they played. The exhibition game, I'm not going to try to say their name now.
Yeah, it's just, I picture Fredericks getting something like 15 to 20 minutes around this year. I unfortunately picture Johnson getting 5 to 10, and most of that's going to come in garbage time against, like, the Western Michigans of the world, because Justin Jennifer is going to run that offense, and he's going to get most of the minutes because he's a good defender. And he knows the offense, and he can manage the offense, and that's about it. I love JJ. I love the skills he brings, Johnson just has the higher upside, but I don't think we're going to see him enough.
And he's got like the pedigree, like his brother is in the NBA.
So yeah, that too.
That's like the potential is there for him. I think it's going to be interesting what they do with the point guard minutes, because you really have like four guys who could really run the show, depending on if they want Johnson to run the point. Cumberland's going to handle the ball a ton, especially late in the game. Like, Broom, obviously, could, like, be a point guard, as he was last year, and, like, Jennifer. Like, it'd be interesting to see, like, what the rotations are this year. It's like, there's so many different ways they could go.
Do you think there's a scenario where it's Broom at the point, Johnson at the two, and then Cumberland at the three? Do we see that ever? Like, pending injury, pending, you know, assuming Jennifer doesn't have an injury or is in foul trouble, do you think we see that lineup? Because I would love that lineup.
I think we could. Like, the big question would we see that lineup for, like, more than a segment? Or, like, more than, like, 10 minutes?
Yeah.
See, even, like, no. if you like, throw in Fredericks and, like, have, like, those four and whatever big they put on there, that just seems like an interesting lineup. Like, could get up and down and, like, maybe, like, their press lineup.
Like, my ideal lineup, like, out from the outset would be Johnson, Broom, Cumberland, Frederick/Moore, and Trey Scott.
Yeah, that would be mine, too.
That would be such a ballsy lineup that Mick would never do it.
It's like, it just seems like you could just rotate in Brooks and Scott and Sosa, like a three-man rotation there, and just play the hot hand with whoever's doing well at center. And like the four, like there'll be some minutes left over there.
Yeah.
But I would like to see them try to mix it up instead of just like going the two bigs, because we harped about that enough already.
I feel we're going to harp about that in the same podcast in February.
Yeah, so what's your big prediction for the season? Like, we both think they'll win a lot of games. Like, do you think they end up with a top 5 seed in the NCAA tournament? Let's throw that one out there.
No. I think their basement is, or I'm sorry, their floor, basement floor, whatever, is 20 wins. I think they make the tournament, though. I think they win something between 20 and 30. But I think they're going to be, depending on how things fall out, maybe a double-digit seed, but somewhere between like an 8 and a 10.
Outside of last year, they've been 6, 9, 8, and then 5 when they lost to Harvard. It's like, I think they'll be somewhere in that like 6 to 10 range as well. Because if they just do the KenPom record, which is 21-9, not counting the conference tournament, like 9 losses in this league just seems like it would like be a strike again. Because we know how like petty the committee has been with the league as a whole.
Right.
Like discounting what like Cincinnati getting a 2-seed last year. It's like the rest of the league got, I think, really underseeded.
Yeah, it's. I don't know where those 9 losses would come from in the conference. Or I guess overall, it just. I don't know. There's so many unknowns with this roster and what kind of. I mean, what they're going to do defensively, but what they're going to do offensively. And man, if they continue to try to give Trey Scott and Isaiah Brooks the ball underneath on pretty much every possession, it's going to lean more towards like 9 than anything else, unfortunately, or more than that.
Yeah, that can't be like their go-to. Like those guys have their strengths and their weaknesses. Like their strengths are not like passing out of the post.
Right.
It's like if Trey Scott's got getting like 7 field goal attempts per game, that seems like too many. But if he's like killing the glass, like he's getting a lot of putback attempts, like you take it. But he's like taking like 7 like separate positions. That seems like a bit too many, unless like he's really cooking.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll see. I mean, I still think this team makes the tournament. We all know this is going to be a rebuild year. I don't think they're going to completely fall off a cliff. That will never happen with Mick Cronin team. But whether they get a high seed or a low seed in the tournament, whether they go deep in the conference tournament or the NCAA tournament, it really all just depends on what Mick does with this offense. And the sample size is small, but it seems like it's going to be the same old kind of offense with less talented front court players. And that's really concerning to me. And I hate to leave it on that kind of like negative tone, but.
Yes, but before we like wrap it up, like I'm kind of worried about the shooting. It's like the only three they made the second half against Tusculum, there I said it this time, was when like Sam Martin hit his three at the end. And like as a team, they went 4-23. The starters went 0-12. Like that's that probably is not going to carry over too much. That exhibition game where they got like destroyed, they shot really terribly. They shot 39%, 3-11, and 70% at the foul line. And they shot, 65% at the foul line, 17% from three, and 35% from the field in the exhibition game. Like, there's a lot of kinks to work out in the offense. And, like, Ohio State, they have, like, the same thing. Like, trying to find who, like, their new key cog on offense is going to be without Keanu Bates Diop, who was amazing last year, and like Jayshon Tate. So it's going to be interesting for them, but I don't know. It just seems like it's going to be an ugly-ass game. And
yeah, the difference is Ohio State in there. I mean, I don't know where UNC Pembroke ranks compared to Tusculum, but I mean, Ohio State turned the ball over 21 times. They shot atrociously from three, and they still put up 81 points, seemingly rather easily. UC is not going to give up 81 points to Ohio State, but it just shows that Ohio State had that turnover and they pretty much didn't see a lot of the negative effects that UC did going into this season from an offensive standpoint.
28 of the 68 points off turnovers, which is like, oh, great defense. But at the same time, it's like, oh, that's a lot of points off turnovers. It's not something that you can really rely on every time out. But if they only scored points off turnovers, they would have only lost by 13. So, I mean, the defense is definitely going to be there. And, yeah, it's like you mentioned it earlier, like about seeing some of these ugly games. I think they're just going to happen from the start. And we're going to be in for another season of the grind.
Right. So we'll see. At least we have the new arena.
And it's going to be pretty awesome, at least for the start, with the new arena and like playing Ohio State. I know last year I said, like, Ohio State, like, who really gives a shit? But like now that it's actually here, it's like, oh, Ohio State, that's actually like pretty awesome. But,
well, Ohio State's actually they're actually good. Like, they're a good basketball team, right?
Yeah, like it just means so much to so many people for them to play like a team they never played. The last time they played Ohio State in Ohio was 1921. Well, so it's been a minute.
Just a bit, yeah.
Actually, even the last time they played in the regular season was in Indianapolis, the Greg Oden game, like for him and Mike Conley to play in Indianapolis. Like a real true chance against Ohio State to start the year. And like we'll go through more of the games once they happen, but a big start, and it should be a fun year. I mean, it's basketball. Like, we may complain about some things, but hey, it's basketball season, and that's the important part.
Yeah, we do a lot of nitpicking, this program isn't East Carolina. They are they're a shoe-in for an NCAA tournament pretty much every year, and you know I'm happy where they're at. I just, you know, I'm a fan. I want them. we know what the floor is. I want them to go far beyond that, especially with what we saw what they were capable of doing last year, getting a 2 seed, winning the regular season in the conference tournament. I just, you know, I want more for this program. I want more for the players. I want more for the coaches. I love this program. You love this program too, Scott. We want them to reach the highest of heights.
Yeah, because like we're to the point where like 21 seasons, like 8 in a row, like that's pretty awesome. But like, now that's expected, and with the success they've had in the league, like especially last year, like that's not like expected all the time. But like you think they'll finish near the top of the standings. It's like having high expectations for your program. It's like it's one of the things that happens when you're good, and they're good. It's like we have high expectations. Is there anything else you want to get to before we wrap up this preview?
No, let's say they pull a win on opening night against Ohio State. I don't think it's going to be easy. I think it's going to be one that comes down to the end, but. They got a new arena. They're opening with Ohio State. I say UC wins something like 70. And Samir Torrence, you're gonna look fantastic in red and black. So make the right decision, buddy.
I'll throw up my score.